From the Sky News Centre at 5, the parents of a baby who died after being born in a hospital waiting room are making a formal complaint. The mother of the child, Sarah Proud, says she was told midwives were too busy to move her into a labour ward at Leicester Royal Infirmary. A hospital spokesman says she should have been seen sooner, but only a post-mortem will be able to determine when the child died. Stephen York is the baby's father.
Numbing, isn't it? We're not sleeping well, we're not eating well, we're slightest things will cry. Sarah's not left the house at all. I actually believe they neglected us. They didn't give us the care that we deserve.
Facebook is updating its status to public company after its shares went live on New York's Nasdaq. They went on sale for $38 and immediately shot up to $42 before dropping back a short time ago to $38 again. More than 80 million shares were traded in the first minute. Max Wall from Greencrest Capital is at the Nasdaq in Times Square.
We see a company now valued at $115 billion. It's a very compelling story. It's a very exciting story. And it's now trading on the excitement and compelling nature of its own story, as opposed to its revenue, its clicks, its average revenue per user.
An uncharted object has been found on the seabed during a search for a missing fishing boat and its three-man crew off the Dorset coast. Sonar images haven't been conclusive. The boat called the Purbeck Isle was reported missing at 6 o'clock yesterday. The Olympic flame is on its way to Britain. It's on board a flight from Athens, accompanied by Princess Anne, Lord Coe and David Beckham. In sport, a century looks imminent for England captain Andrew Strauss, who's shutting up his critics on day two of the first test with the West Indies. A short time ago, the hosts were on 200 for two in their first innings. And a psychic pig is set to take over where Paul the Octopus left off at the 2010 World Cup by predicting the results of matches at Euro 2012. Officials in Kiev haven't named the porky tipster just yet. That's the latest. I'm Chris Giles.
BCFM is the award-winning community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice. BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.
Hello, Bristol, and welcome to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and helping us review this week's news is the Respect Party's candidate for Bristol Mayor, Paulette North. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, the Russians say they will attack Eastern Europe if NATO installs the missile defence shield. Plus, the far right beat up, hospitalise and permanently disable a Palestine supporter in Bristol city centre in broad daylight. Avon and Somerset police say they know who it is, so why is the attacker still walking the streets? And how to fight a war without hurting anyone? We're joined by Tim Pope from Bristol's Lincoln Balm War Games Society, who have their annual tabletop sale this weekend. That's in the second hour, after the Murdoch news at 6. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 9 Celsius and some showers. This weekend, highs up to 16, and plenty of drizzle on Saturday, generally cloudy on Sunday. Next week, highs of 20, a fairly cloudy week with some showers, but warmer in the middle of the week. Next weekend, that's the 26th and 27th of May, highs of 16 Celsius, sunshine and showers. Well, we're nearly into June and still it doesn't seem like summer's arrived. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. First, though, the Lopresti report. A Masonic Conservative MP for Filton and Bradley Stoke, Jack Lopresti, said on this show about a month ago he would give me a copy of the 2012 Bristol Provincial Yearbook. This lists the membership of Bristol's 2,000 or so Freemasons in roughly 50 lodges. Jack also said he would also arrange a guided tour of the Masonic Hall at 31 Park Street, as the Freemasons have nothing to hide. Well, 4 weeks on, two letters, no replies, and still no Provincial Yearbook. But Jack has informed me that there is an open day at the Bristol Masonic Temple behind the Council House on Saturday the 16th of June. So, joining us for this week's news review is the Respect Party's candidate for Bristol Mayor, Paulette North. Hi, Paulette. Welcome to Drive Time. First of all, you had a fantastic success in Bradford with Respect, with George Galloway being elected in a by-election. Do you think you can have something similar here in Bristol?
Well, our message is the same as George Galloway's in Bradford. The message of respect is the same right the way across. And I think it appeals to the ordinary person who doesn't want to see austerity, the cuts, lessening of the National Health Service, the public sector, an end to the war, end to privatisation. And I think that there's only the Respect Party that's actually saying all those things. As George says, the three main parties are the same cheeks of the same bottom. Says another word, A, but I'm not going to say that.
But with respect, Paulette, you're not George Galloway. A massive following and is extremely well-known, particularly by being on national TV, national radio, having his own show on the radio. So do you not think by respect even standing against the Labour Party, what you're doing is essentially splitting the left vote?
Well, no, because it's not a left vote, is it? I think the Labour Party, unless they actually say different things to what they've been saying, we've seen, they are, and as I've just said, the same cheek of the same bottom as the other two major parties. So no, I haven't heard anything different from them except, you know, cut, but cut slower. But they're still talking about cuts. No, we're not talking about cuts. We don't want cuts. We want more money into the public services, and we want young people to have a hope and a future.
The problem is, of course, that most of what you might call broadly call the right, certainly the Conservatives, seem to be quite well behind this character, George Ferguson, who's a merchant venturer. This is an organisation that hundreds of years ago, admittedly, financed the slave trade. And they seem to be, you know, sort of very much behind George, whereas the left, if you want to call it that, you've got a Labour candidate for mayor and a Green and a Respect. So the vote is going to be split at the very least three ways, isn't it? And it looks as if almost before the vote's even started, there's going to be a victory for George Ferguson. The other side is all focusing on the same candidate.
Well, I disagree with you because I think people will make up their minds, and I don't know if everybody is going to vote for George Ferguson. I mean, he had his launch, I think, last week, and he actually admitted that he didn't put any policies forward. You know, there he stood with all of his mates around him. Anybody can do that. I'd like to see what his policies are. And I think that if people are fooled to vote for those sorts of policies when we're in this state, then, you know, that's obviously up to them. And I think the left, perhaps, you're right, it may split the vote and we should perhaps get together. But again, as I've said, I don't think that their policies are that much different from the right's policies at the moment.
So do you see it being sort of negotiations between now and October as to who's actually going to stand? I mean, obviously people, to begin with, put themselves forward and then they think, well, if it makes sense, if I stand down, somebody much better than who it looks like might get elected does. Do you think there'll be negotiations between now and October over these possible points?
Well, I've been nominated by my Respect Party. We had a meeting last week and we looked very carefully at what we were doing, what our policies would be, and we have been planning for this for a while. If people want to negotiate with us, then we're very open to having discussions about that. But I have been nominated. It has gone out as a press release. It was in the Evening Post. It has been on BBC television. And that's where we stand at the moment. We think that our policies are different from other people's policies, other parties' policies, and that's what we're going
now with. I seem to remember Respect has got one of those kind of mnemonics where every letter of Respect stands for something. Do you know what that is?
I know what a mnemonic is, yes.
Yes, well, no, what does it stand for? I mean, what policies?
Respect, equality, S is for socialism, P is for peace, E is for environment, C is for community, and T is for trade unionism. So those are our broad framework, if you like, and then within that we obviously have our different policies, individual policies about different issues.
Okay, well, we'll try and tease some of those out in the next hour or so. I'm also joined by old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. Martin, this week the euro crisis hits another level. You know, the Spanish banks, it almost seems like a sort of slow death. It's like the euro is Count Dracula and somebody is banging the stake into Count Dracula's heart over the period of about 2 years, very slowly killing it off. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, the way people think about this is largely, and the presentation in the mainstream media is largely misleading. This isn't a euro crisis, it's a banking crisis. What will happen if Greece is forced out of the euro one way or another, and that seems fairly likely one way or another, is that the CDO market will implode.
The CDO is the
collateralised debt obligation, in other words, the derivatives market. Mm. And that's all based in the City of London. So there will be, not all based in the City of London, but it's one of the major focal points for that market. So in actual fact, Britain will be at ground zero for this nuclear financial explosion. And countries like Norway will get the tsunami, we will get the explosion. Basically, having the City of London in Britain is going to turn out to be a huge, huge liability for the country. And that's what we're looking at. And of course, people are still talking about it in terms of the euro. The euro really is just a transmission mechanism for the banking crisis. And of course, it allows people to come up with silly kind of racial stereotypes and national stereotypes about Greek laziness, German hard work and all the rest of it, all of which is irrelevant, even in terms of just the euro. Because of course, the Germans being in the euro gives them a huge competitive advantage. It's them that should leave the euro, if anybody should. They won't, and therefore what will happen? I mean, at the G8 summit, the Americans will be trying to twist the Americans will be twisting Angela Merkel's arm, saying, for goodness sake, print some money. And she will say no, because that's the general mood in Germany. They don't want to print any money. But in that case, we're going to have a free market solution, which is a banking
company. So is there a political angle to the Germans saying they don't want to print money? Because their economy is fairly healthy.
Their economy is fairly healthy because they're inside the euro. And if they had the Deutschmark back, they would find that they were in the same trouble as anybody else.
So is Greece inside the euro, but they're not healthy, are they?
No, but that's because there's a complete there's a big discrepancy between the competitiveness of the two economies, and with two different currencies that would matter less. But the point is that the Germans are basically taking a sort of hardline position of, look, we're not going to print any more money to try and reflate the economy, in which case they're following basically a free market approach. But the free market approach means the free market solution to the crisis is a crash. Mm. And that's what, if there was a Conservative sitting here, that's what I'd be saying to them. You are free marketeers, the free market solution is a crash. Do you want a crash? And if you don't want a crash, you're not a free marketeer. Now, in actual fact, nobody's a real free marketeer. They're pulling, even Cameron is talking about the ECB printing, creating money in order to try and float the euro off the rocks. So he's not a free marketeer either. Nobody is in the real world.
So the new French president, Francois Hollande, did a little trip, got inaugurated, I think it was Tuesday morning, mm. wasn't it, and did a trip straight over to Germany to meet Angela Merkel to discuss. Mm. Well, what do you think what they were discussing? One of the things that I noticed about that day was that the aircraft got hit by lightning, didn't it? And just as Hollande was heading off what he thought was a nemesis meeting, he had to the plane then had to turn around and head back to Paris immediately, and then he was a few hours late to see Angela Merkel. But do you think Francois Hollande is saying things to Merkel like the Germans have got to leave the euro?
No, what everybody's arguing about at the moment is whether the European Central Bank should issue bonds in the name of the European Union. Because according to the treaty that exists at the moment, it can't. So it can't do what the Bank of England is doing. It can't do QE, and the same as the Federal Reserve has been doing, quantitative easing. Now, what everybody else wants to do is for the Americans, the British, various people are pushing the Germans to allow the European
Central
Bank.
But aren't the Germans being sensible here? What they're saying is
the Germans are following the free market playbook.
You can't just make up money out of nowhere and give it to the banks.
Patently you can, because that's what's been going on in Britain and America. Whether it's a good idea or not is another matter. And the Germans, for historical reasons and just for cultural reasons, are opposed to it. But of course, they've then got to face up to the reality, which is what everybody else is saying, is if you don't print some money, the banking system's going to collapse. And I believe the Germans do have a plan B for that. They're trying to put a firewall around their banks, and they've got Deutschmarks potentially in the wings to bring forward. But the fact of the matter is that this kind of crisis is going to make the Lehman Brothers crisis of 4 years ago look like a walk in the park. And that's what they're panicking
okay,
about.
Okay, so what's your prediction then for the next few weeks? If something does happen, what's it going to be? Is it the Greeks leaving the euro? And if so, what's going to happen?
I think it's just going to be disorderly, because they've got no agreement at the top about how to manage this. So it'll be a disorderly, it'll be a panic one morning, and when that happens, there's a potential for a complete meltdown in the financial markets. That's the reality, and that's why they've been printing money, trying everything to kick the can down the road over the last 4 years. And of course, they've been telling everybody that the recovery is going to happen, and when the recovery happens, there's not going to be a recovery. There's going to be a crash, and then there's going to be a major social crisis. Of major proportions, worse than the 30s, basically.
Paulette, what's your take on all this?
I try to make sense of it for the ordinary person, because that's what I am, an ordinary person. And I think that what the Germans are trying to do is to continue with this austerity programme, the cuts, the cuts, the cuts, to actually rein back the debt. And I think that's where there is a huge problem with Greece, because Greece don't want that anymore. So
it doesn't work either.
And it doesn't work, absolutely, and it doesn't work. But that's what the Germans want to carry on doing, and if Sarkozy had got in, the French would have gone along with that as well. And, of course, England is big in that with David Cameron. Just forgot him just then, David Cameron. So I think what the Greeks are going to do, or what will happen to them, is bring back the drac. And I think that that will be a very interesting situation, because then they will be able to set their own payback rates for any debt. There will be a different type of levying, and also there will be more of a collectiveness that will come from that economic solution. So I think that there is going to be a lot more to this. We're going to see a lot more pain. We're going to see a lot more pain here in England. We're only meant to have got 6% of the cuts that we're facing at the moment. And so, because Britain is intent on going along with their austerity drive, which is the difference between my party, Respect. We don't want the austerity drive. We want to re-energise, refloat the economy by actually creating jobs, putting money back in to the system so that people can actually spend.
So, Mark,
which is
Martin,
what Greece,
just getting back to the euro, Martin. I mean, are the Greeks in the situation there then, where they printed up loads of drachma and they're just basically waiting for a weekend where they will just basically fill up their cash points with drachmas over the weekend, and it'll all start on a Monday morning.
It's more interesting that the leader of the Syriac party, I can't remember his name, is Alex something or other, Tsipras or something. What he's saying is, we don't want to leave the euro. We want to change the deal on the bailout. And of course, the Germans and others are saying, well, you can't do that. Mm. And they're saying, well, in that case, we will just repudiate our debt, in which case your banks will collapse. So it's a game of chicken. Mm. And what they're pushing for is not to leave the euro, it's to get a better deal. And of course, if they don't get a better deal, they're prepared to pull the house down.
So Greece
will not have a good, easy ride either way. Just leaving the euro won't help them, and staying in the euro won't help them. So they're reaching the point now where they're feeling a bit bloody-minded
about
it.
So is it fair to say that these pigs countries, the Spanish, etc., could all get together and basically say to the Germans, look, we're going to do this, and that's the end of it? And
Greece is only 2% of the GDP of the EU, but they are in a position to blackmail everybody else, because they're in a situation where they've got nothing to lose. And that is the situation they're in. They're saying, we don't want to leave the euro. And in actual fact, there's no mechanism for taking them out of the euro. So all these people saying they'll have to leave the euro, so, well, how are you going to take them out? Because if they refuse to go, then they can't be taken out. They can refuse to pay their debts, and that, of course, crashes the banks in Paris, Berlin, Frankfurt and London. And of course, that is the sword that the Greeks are holding over the heads of David Cameron and the others. You want your banks to collapse? Fine. There you go.
And
collapse banks.
Don't you think the Spanish will also sort of take that line?
Well, the Spanish, of course, they've got a right-wing government, you know, and they've tried to cut. But of course, the as you pointed out earlier, and this is why the Greeks have decided to play hardball, this won't work. Attempts to cut public expenditure actually make the deficit worse and the situation worse. Now, if it was going to be painful but it was going to work, you could see people saying, well, let's do it. But if it's going to be painful and it's actually making the situation worse, it's got no merit. And at that point, people say, well, the hell with it, let's just do what we want to do anyway. But nobody should think that there's an easy solution to a capitalist crisis as deep as this.
But to what extent,
you can't just be elected and solve it, because it's
Martin, to what extent are the bond markets, which control a lot of this, you know, this is basically the people who are buying and selling these big quantities of money and are betting on these big international markets. To what extent are they just sort of apolitical, and to what extent do they actually have a political agenda themselves?
There's a massive political agenda, because it's all run through things like Moody's and, you know, the three big ratings agencies who have their arms twisted to down. I mean, the US debt position is actually worse than Greece's. But nobody's telling them to get themselves sorted out, because they've got nuclear weapons and they're a big country, so you can't tell them. They can't tell the Russians either, because they've got nuclear weapons. Greece can be bullied because they're small. And that's the politics behind all of that. And don't forget, who is the bond market? Oh, it's the wealthy classes in another...
Hang on a minute.
If you don't do this, we're not going to lend you our money. It's our money you've got.
Hang on a minute, because Iceland is even smaller, isn't it? And they seem to have stood up to, to these
markets.
Well, because
Iceland is so small that they've managed to get away with doing what they're doing. And of course, what they've done is they've refused to pay what their private banks had run up, and basically the British and Dutch governments picked up the tab for that, because a lot of British and Dutch local authorities and individuals held Landsbankian IceSave accounts. So in other words, Iceland's only got a population the size of Bristol, and they've just said, right, we're not paying, and basically that's been absorbed into the British debt, and the British debt is so huge that Iceland's debt being added to the top hasn't been noticed by most people. But of course, what will happen when Greece doesn't pay is that debt will be added to the British debt, because it's the British banks that erode it. In fact, the British banks are not that exposed to Greece, but they are exposed to the French banks who are. And it's the whole thing is like a dominoes. The first domino goes, and it all goes all the way around,
and
all the way down.
And that's why Cameron is so worried, even though we're not in the
Cameron
Euro.
Cameron is calling for Euro bonds. He wants the Germans to print money and give up on austerity, but we're not giving up on austerity. It's the Germans who should give up on austerity, not us.
But surely Cameron is actually... in a position to tell the Spanish and the Greeks and people like that how to behave, and the Italians, because Britain's position is much stronger.
No, it's not.
Even though they're outside the euro,
Britain's position is actually quite weak. It's because we've got a separate currency that we've been allowed to get away with stuff. But eventually, people are going to notice that our debt position is pretty poor,
and then
the speculators will attack the pound. And that's what will happen.
Okay, Martin, finally on this, what lessons have we got to learn from the Icelandics then? Because they do seem to be a plucky bunch.
Well, I think that's what you've got. Basically, we've got to accept the fact that the private banking system is bust. We spent the last 4 years trying to resurrect the private banking system and talk in terms of when we get back to normal. We're never going back to normal. The private banks are bust. They should be properly nationalised, and then they should be run as a public utility. And we should be openly saying that. And the Labour Party should be openly saying that. They're not. They should be. And that's where respect comes in, because no doubt that's the kind of thing you would want.
Yeah, and the governments shouldn't keep shoring up the bankers in this country, because that is what they do all the time, as they have done and done in the other countries. We mustn't keep shoring up the bankers. They are to blame for all of this, and then the governments who shore them up should not do that. They should be actually putting money into the public, into the people, into the voters that vote for them. They should be looking after their interests, not the few, the rich, that have their interests in the banks.
Martin, today Facebook has floated its business on the New York Stock Exchange, and we hear that the shares from the issue price of $38 are up something like $5 just on the issue. What does it actually mean for a business like Facebook when they do float on the stock exchanges? Obviously, there's millions of people out there,
many listeners on Facebook. For those involved.
What does it mean, though, for the actual management of the company and the ownership of the business?
Well, I'm not very au fait with Facebook's internal structure. But, I mean, basically, what is going on is all the money sloshing around in the financial markets is being used for speculation. So, in actual fact, you can make a lot of money on the crash if you bet the right way. And that's why these people are fairly blasé about the crash, because as long as they put the money in the right boxes, then they'll make money out of it. What's going to happen is that as the crash goes through, a small minority of the population will end up with all the assets in the society, and everybody else will end up with nothing. That is a revolutionary situation. Because there's no justice in that. It's not because they've earned that money. It's because the whole market has been propped up by the government over the last 4 years, and that's allowed them to corner all the assets in the society. That is not because they've worked harder or done anything better than anybody else. It's a scam.
Okay, Paulette.
Pure speculation.
What is the Respect Party's policy on what to do about the financial crisis then, Paulette?
Well, Our policy is to actually make sure that we have a local income tax that is based on your ability to pay.
Not another new tax.
It'll be a tax. It's not a new tax, is it? Because we've got income tax. It's saying those people that are not taxed enough need to be taxed more. So it's tax the rich again. Look at the big businesses. Look at the fact that if the chairman of Rentokil retired today, his pension would not be a problem. He would get something like, I think it's £18,000 a day for his pension when we've got people out there on the streets who are losing money all the time? Their pension means less and less and less to them. These rich people need to be taxed. The council ban, for example, for houses. So many people are living in huge, huge houses with the ability to pay more council tax. They haven't been. Let's look at Tesco that brings in huge amounts of profits. Let's do the windfall taxes. Let's look at the £83 billion in uncollected trade taxes. That's business taxes.
But these businesses, Paulette, these businesses are going to be off, aren't they? If, as soon as you start overtaxing, they're going to move abroad.
No, of course not.
As the same as the rich people.
They won't move abroad at all because they still need, there will still be people buying the stuff from them. So they will pay more tax and people will be buying and it will go round and round and round like that. So they won't be off. People keep saying they'll be off, but of course you don't think all the Tescos are going to close, are they? And if they do, then perhaps we might have cooperatives. Perhaps it might be better if they do go off. We could have more cooperatives and people actually growing their own food, and people like in Withywood that can't have their gardens, you know, perhaps they'll grow their own and it'll be a much healthier organic place.
All right, Martin, this week we've had a coup at the 1922 committee, something called the 301 committee or club.
Well, you need to explain what the 1922 committee
It's a committee of backbench Conservative MPs, and the old regime has been moved out by some people called the 301 Club or 301 Committee, which are very pro-Cameronites. Now, can you explain, you know, what is the 1922 Committee and what does this actually mean?
Well, I mean, I'm not super au fait with internal Conservative Party stuff, but I mean, the 1922 Committee is elected by Conservative MPs to represent, it's like a sort of trade union, if you like, of backbench Tory MPs, and therefore it represents a fairly good indication of the mood of opinion inside the Tory leadership elite, you know, the MPs. So Cameron's people have done rather well. No doubt he's quite happy with that. But his right-wing opposition within the Conservative Party has also done rather well, and he'd be less happy about that.
Okay.
Aren't they these people that benchmark? Wouldn't Cameron be looking at this 1922 club to see, you know, which way the wind blows?
Well, I think the Tory party is facing both ways at the moment.
Well, apparently the Tory leadership,
parties.
Apparently the Tory leadership, a Conservative central office, has spent a lot of time over the last month making sure that pro-Cameronites are elected to this committee, and there's a lot of backbench MPs that are not happy about this kind of party within a party now.
Well, I mean, what you've got in all political parties, and I suspect even in respect, is you've got a spread of views.
No.
Well, I mean,
we have got a spread of views. It's healthy.
It's natural and inevitable.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, coming back to what you were saying earlier about standing for the mayor, I think that and Tony's saying that the right are all behind George Ferguson. The right aren't all behind George Ferguson. I think the Liberals will stand somebody, and so will the Conservatives. Mm. George Ferguson is trying to pretend to be above politics altogether. Mm. Let's keep politics out of politics is his position, which I think is actually pretty vacuous, really. Mm. But the point is that I didn't want a mayor at all, because what we're going to have is perhaps 7 or 8 candidates, and whoever wins will perhaps win on 20% of the vote, and then we'll have all power in the city for 4 years.
What George Ferguson's doing is expressing a quite widely held view, which is that politics in the city is broken, and he wants Bristol
what
first.
He's saying is, let's get politics out of politics. Why don't you have somebody like me? I won't tell you what I'm going to do, but I'm a very nice guy, and you'll find out when you voted for me. Like, well, thanks very much, George, but once he starts saying what he's going to do, we'll say, you're a right winger, or you're a left winger. I think he's a centrist. I mean, we've had him on the show. He's a centrist. He's a kind of supporter of the coalition, but he's a bit critical. I mean, that's okay. I mean, he's allowed to have his view, but don't pretend you haven't got a view, George. You've got a view. Of course you have. Want to know what it is.
Yeah, and it will come out if he is elected mayor. It would come
out. Come out in the election campaign.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Let's hope that he shows his colours sooner rather than later.
Well, as Jenny Smith was saying on last week's programme, he has actually been a Liberal Democrat councillor.
Yes.
Well, indeed. So that would be not far from his views. Mm. But, of course, if he's not going to stand as a Liberal, I think the Liberals will stand somebody against him, and that will actually eat into his vote. So everybody's going to be eating into everybody else's vote, and what we'll have is a very spread. I'm not quite sure whether there's a transfer involved. you know, you could have a situation where people could vote respect one, Labour two, or something like that. You know, we'll have to see. Yeah. But nobody knows. Yeah. It's really uncharted
but
waters.
But the Lib Dems are fielding candidates, aren't they? I mean, they've all of the parties have just got to go through a selection process and nominate.
Well, if George doesn't want to stand as a Liberal, he will then have to stand against a Liberal, won't he?
Okay, on to our first. Well, we've done several stories there in one, but a man has been jailed for a knife threat over a £250 taxi fare. A Lithuanian who threatened a taxi driver with a knife, this is from The Post, after refusing to pay the fare from London to Bristol, has been jailed for 18 months. Kastisis Spadivikas came from Lithuania to London and arrived at the Victoria coach station in the early hours of April the 14th, Bristol Crown Court's been told. He agreed to pay the taxi driver Shnawaz Razak £250 for a ride to Bristol, but when he was driven to Bristol Temple Meads, he failed to pay, produced a knife when challenged. Mr Razak then teamed up with another taxi driver who locked Spadivikas in the back of his cab and enabled police to arrest him. This chap of 37 years of age, of no fixed address, pleaded guilty for having an offensive weapon and making off without payment. Now, first of all, Paulette, this is pretty horrific because it's obvious that the taxi drivers themselves have had to arrest this guy, and his first thing he did after coming into Britain and arriving in London is to effectively try and steal £250 from a taxi driver.
Well, I think this is a very sad case, isn't it, really? On all sides. I mean, the taxi driver must have been absolutely frightened out of his wits when he had a knife thrust at him. But £250 seems an awful lot of money to pay for a fare.
But that's a cab from London. Well, it's a normal for a very long cab journey to for you to be paying quite a lot of money, isn't it? Because
it's absolutely right that he, you know, has been punished for this because he did wrong, didn't he? But I think one might need to look.
Well, he very nearly got away, didn't he?
Yeah.
He very nearly got away. There does seem to be, you know, some implications with some of the other stories that have been going on the last couple of weeks about policing, cutting back on policing, and also just generally on immigration. You know, should this kind of thing, should this kind of chap be encouraged from Eastern Europe to come to Britain?
Well, I think that, he wasn't obviously encouraged, but I think everybody should have the right to move about as they want to move about. So he's obviously, you know, come over here with the right to come over here. It's not an immigration issue.
Well, what is Respect's view on immigration generally then?
Well, we have a view. My view on it, on immigration is an open door policy. I think we should have a no borders policy because I think that a lot of our immigration rules are racist. Now, at our conference that we held, it was felt that there should be immigration policies and that open borders policy is not one that Respect would actually go for at this present time. So it is part, as Martin says, there are different views in different parties, and you don't agree with all the views. They didn't agree with mine, but I agree with most of their policies, and therefore that is our view that there should be immigration policies.
But I mean, isn't there a certain amount of guilt tripping goes on here where you say, well, if you are against immigration, you must be a racist? Isn't there, to a certain extent?
Well, I think it's
migrant
used.
Migrant workers are actually forcing down paying conditions in all sorts of ways.
Well, I think.
And it suits the ruling class, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is used. Immigration is seen as, and that's why, you know, I have a view on it, is seen as the new racism, because you will get certain people who are quite anti-racist saying, oh, but we should have immigration policies, we have too many people here, the arguments you've just said, etc., etc. And I think if you actually look at those a little bit deeper, you could wash all those views away.
What about things like housing? Because, I mean, it's one of the reasons that we've got a housing bubble is because there's a tremendous demand on housing, largely due to migrants.
Well, no, actually, I had somebody on my show yesterday, in fact, who was, in fact, that's where I'm going to after this, down to the council house, where we're not building new stock, and we have, I think it's something like 14,000 empty properties in Bristol, which should be filled with the homeless. Also, the welfare benefits cut means that quite a lot of the people that are on housing benefit are not going to get their housing benefits paid, and it's again the wealthy landlords that are going to win out.
So are you saying that there is no shortage of housing?
there is shortage of housing. We need to build houses, but we also need to fill those empty houses as well. And we need to also put our people who are not working into direct work by actually looking at some of those properties that need renovating, and actually renovate them. And then that would give more work as well to those that are out of work. So it's an interesting one about housing.
Well, what would you say to you know, critics of the modern immigration policy? Because certainly back in the 1960s, when there was a whole another wave of immigration, a previous wave of immigration, there were lots and lots of jobs. There were actually, you know, people in Britain could pick and choose jobs, and also the wages and paying conditions were a lot better. Nowadays, it's a different story. And so do you not recognise that it's actually very different now to what it was in the 1960s? And even people who came to Britain in the 60s are now saying, well, immigration's gone much too far.
Well, I don't know what you mean by much too far. We aren't actually having, you know, thousands of people wanting to come into the country. We have got a problem with jobs. They need to be reinvigorated. We need to have a much more robust system. Our youngsters that are here, that are born here, that are going to our universities, are going to find it very difficult. They're being called the lost generation to get jobs. So I think it's a much more complex issue than just blaming it on the immigrants. I think what we need to do is to look at the whole economic situation, the whole situation of job creation, apprenticeships, etc., and actually try and create these jobs. Now, housing, if you look at that, there's a lot of stock that should be being rebuilt. There's also houses that need doing up because they're not fit to live in, and that can then generate jobs for council workers out there. And that's one of the things that will be said tonight at the council house.
Martin, what's your thoughts about immigration? Because we've got another story as well in the last couple of weeks. This is in the Financial Times. Why no British staff at Pret-a-Manger? An unsettling statistic of the week. The number of UK nationals in employment in the 3 months to December fell by 166,000 compared with the previous year to 26.6 million. Over the same period, the number of non-UK nationals in work rose to 2.6 million, an increase of exactly the same 166,000. So it seems that the number of extra unemployed in Britain is exactly the same as the number of new migrants who are taking those jobs.
Well, they're not necessarily new migrants, they're just born abroad, aren't they? Well, I mean, I think I agree with the mainstream of what Respect has decided, which there needs to be some immigration policy. I think that's no state, until we've abolished the state, and we're a long way away from doing that. All states have to have some control over who is allowed in and is not allowed into the state. Otherwise, you lose. The state has no, you know, it just doesn't exist as a state. Now, having said that, I think that there's an awful lot of scaremongering about immigration. The problems we've got are economic problems to do with the malfunctioning of the economic system, and it's certainly not the fault of those who are coming here to try and
I'm trying to illustrate that it's actually the fault of open borders migration policy, no, not the individuals
there
that,
is
that
there
do
is
it.
There is no open borders policy.
There,
this is, a
there is with Europe.
This is a
there?
Fantasy.
There is with Eastern
there is,
Europe.
There is not. Well, Eastern Europe are in the EU.
And
anybody from the, I mean, just as anybody from Britain can go and live in south of Spain. Perhaps we should tell all the expats in Spain that they're going to have to knock down their houses and come back here because they're not allowed to live in Spain. They would say, "Well, why can't we live in Spain?" Well, if you want to go and live in Spain to retire, Spanish people can come here to work. That's the quid pro quo, isn't it?
In fact, a lot of our Eastern European brothers and sisters are going back because they're finding their living standards are actually growing more than the ones that are over here.
Their economies are doing slightly better.
But according to the FT,
jobs
according to this FT article,
there.
The opposite is the case. There's many more people still taking jobs in Britain. But anyway, there's one little adjunct to this little immigration discussion. That is that Huddersfield MP Barry Shearman has demanded British jobs for British workers. This is always one of those things that seems that a lot of people don't like you saying, that British British jobs in Britain should actually go to British people first. Martin, what do you think about that?
Well, if you've got private employers, they'll employ whoever they like, because that's what employers do, and they'll want the best person for the job at the price they can get.
But this is the opposite of Pret-a-Manger, isn't it? The problem is
East European workers are good workers by and large, and they will work for less than British workers will work for. And of course, employers will take them in preference, because that's the way it works. During the early 19th century in America, in New York and Chicago, each new wave of workers came in at a lower wage rates than the previous.
So are British workers lazy?
British workers are not used to working for the kind of money. In Poland, when I lived in Poland in the late 1990s, a good wage was £100 a month. Yeah? Now, you don't have to earn very much in Britain to earn more than £100 a month. Don't forget that Eastern European economies have been smashed to bits by neoliberalism. There's a huge unemployment problem in most of Eastern Europe because of the capitalist policies that have been pursued. They've not pursued policies of full employment. And basically, in large parts of Lithuania, for example, all young people are leaving because there's no hope.
So are you saying that the living costs in Britain then are much higher than for many of these Eastern European workers?
Their living costs are higher, but even so, you're going to find in the middle of a crisis, everybody is going to cling to whatever driftwood's floating past. Now, when the banks collapse, as I mentioned will happen earlier, there's going to be mass unemployment across Europe. We're talking maybe 50% unemployment in some countries, perhaps even 75%. Mm. And then we really are going to see some fighting. Mm. And it could really be, it's either going to be the immigrants versus the locals, or it's going to be all of us against the wealthy classes and their military.
So Paulette, do you think this is almost a battle being set up here?
Well, what I say to this is, and I agree with Martin's analysis about the fact that, you know, people will cling to driftwood, they'll move about because that's what they've done since time. But what we say is join a trade union. Let's bring trade union rights into this. Let's make sure everybody is in a trade union. Let's make sure that we don't divide workers by giving less money to this worker because they're from Eastern Europe. We need to see proper trade unions in place.
That's exactly right. The rate for the job should be the rate for the job.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter where somebody comes from Poland, from wherever, they must be paid British wage rates.
Absolutely.
Because at one stage they were talking about having Lithuanians working in Britain at Lithuanian wage rates.
Yeah.
And that is totally unacceptable.
Absolutely. And they don't want it either.
Well, they don't want it either, you know, exactly. So we should be able to get everybody to agree on
that. Absolutely.
We all want decent wages for everybody. And in fact, decent wages for everybody is the way to reflate the economy.
Driving down
everybody's wages is the way to destroy it.
Paulette has just mentioned the trade union, so we're going to go on to what I suppose is just about a trade union. That's the Royal College of Nursing. And questions this week to the Health Secretary, Andrew Lansley, who bravely popped his head above the parapet at the Royal College of Nurses. Martin, it was Andrew Lansley, I think, David Cameron at the Royal College of Nursing conference 2 years ago that said there would be no top-down organisation of the National Health Service.
Well, yes, and there has been, hasn't there?
Okay, so let's go to last weekend's Royal College of Nursing conference and questions by members to the Health Secretary, Andrew Lansley.
John McGillan, Northern Ireland. Mr. Lansley, given today's proposed pension changes, i.e. retirement at 68 years of age, how does the Right Honourable Gentleman envisage the nursing profession fulfilling the required full 37.5-hour week at a time when we are currently working under enormous pressure in a highly physical and mentally challenging job at ward level? How does he propose that we continue to do this until we reach retirement age, bearing in mind that the average 68-year-old is more likely to have succumbed to ill health and possibly be the patient themselves?
Can I have Graham Reevy?
As a party who champions law and order, what does the Minister think of someone removing just under £100 from my wage packet last month without my permission to put into the NHS pension scheme, which yielded the Treasury a profit of approximately £2 billion last year? Is this theft? And should the government be prosecuted?
Well, the raucous applause goes on for quite a long time, and unfortunately, they didn't broadcast the answers, if any, that Mr. Lansley gave. But Martin, what about this, particularly the second one there? I mean, there's so much for the Royal College of Nursing to criticise Mr. Lansley about at the moment. This whole principle of £100 a month being basically taken out of people's wage packets now and going straight to the Treasury.
Well, I mean, what I would say about all of this kind of penny pinching is it's idiotic. But leaving aside that it's unfair, I mean, why should nurses pay the price for the faults of the bankers? I mean, there's no fairness in that. But actually, cutting nurses' spending power is actually going to crash the economy.
Yeah.
And that is exactly why it's stupid.
Yeah.
And this is what's so silly about what's going on.
Absolutely.
Just spending doesn't solve the problem either. The capitalist crisis is so deep that if you were to spend, you wouldn't necessarily solve the problem.
No, but cutting
your own throat, it would help. It would help. At least you wouldn't be cutting your own throat and shooting yourself in the head.
So what's the purpose? What's the purpose of this then?
Because it's all based on ideology. The idea is if we drive down public spending enough, the private sector will somehow magically pick up the slack, and we'll all have a whole new burst of life of capitalism, and new technologies will come forward.
Well,
massive investment will happen.
Well, it's a way of letting private companies get more money, isn't it?
Well, it's a way
of making the rich richer.
Private companies
can
only survive.
The public sector.
Yeah, but what they're doing
to
is
allow the free market in and
well,
to allow
them, it's based on the so-called theory of crowding out. That is, the more public sector there is, the less private sector. Now, this is just wrong. The public sector and the private sector are in fact, interdependent. And the private sector is actually drawing its horns in because the public sector's cutting back.
Mm.
And the only way to stop the private sector doing that is for the public sector to increase its expenditure.
Yeah.
So we could have a massive crash house building programme. Well, that would be great for B&Q, wouldn't it? But of course, if you're not having a house building program, then B&Q are going to feel the pinch, and then they're going to put people on the dole, and so it goes on.
Yeah.
Now, this is, Greece have reached the point where they've tried this for years, several years, and it's just made everything worse. And they've reached the point of saying, "Well, this is silly." Enough is enough. And Britain has already turned the corner. We've now got a double dip recession, which have been predicting for 2 years. I mean, Ed Balls, to his credit, said this is exactly what's going to happen, and it is exactly what has happened. But of course, it's carry on regardless from the carry on team in charge of the country, but they are going to come a cropper. There's going to be a political crisis long before 2014 and the so-called next election. And I was reading a very interesting thing by Vernon Bogdanar in The Observer, and he said in actual fact they've got these 5-year fixed parliaments now, so if the Liberals were to withdraw from the coalition, there wouldn't be an election. The Queen would call for Ed Miliband to form a government without an election. That is what a 5-year fixed parliament means. So if the Liberals were to switch ships, they could hook up with the Labour Party and push the Tories.
But
into
what about
opposition.
The numbers game? Do they have enough between them, the Lib Dems and the Labour Party?
Well, no, they don't. They don't at the moment. But there wouldn't necessarily be an election. And if you remember, during the election, the immediate post-election period, there was talk of a grand coalition without the Tories, but it would have to have included the SDLP in Northern Ireland, the SNP, Plaid Cymru and so on. And of course, if Sinn Féin could have been included, they would have been over the limit, but Sinn Féin won't be part of British national governments. But on the other, you see that I don't see this government lasting till 2014, not in the middle of this kind
of crisis.
Well,
talking of which, we're going to talk about the Leveson inquiry now, and Prime Minister Andy Coulson, who's here.
Just say something about those nurses that you just had on? I think take my hat off to them. I had to go in to have some physiotherapy treatment because I've got arthritis, and I was talking to one of the physiotherapists who, when I told her that there was a national health demonstration that Saturday down on College Green, was absolutely delighted because she feels that not many people out here are supporting them in there. And she went on to tell me about the fact that they can't even use post-it notes now. When you go to physiotherapy, you might see 2 or 3 different people. You put a post-it note up so that the other physiotherapists know what's happening. That's been scrapped. They can't phone the patients when they used to phone the patients to make sure they're coming in for their appointment or things have changed, that, let alone the fact that physiotherapists have been laid off. They are really up against it, and they are finding it very, very hard. So I take my hat off to the National Health Service. I hope that there is a lot more militancy with them, because there is support outside for them. There were over 200 that marched through Bristol about 3 Saturdays ago to show that we don't want this Lansley bill. And we're very angry at Stephen Williams, who supported the cuts and voted for the Lansley
bill.
And
this is the Liberal Democrat
MP
for Bristol West.
Bristol West.
Okay, just going back for a moment this whole business of fixed term parliaments, because I can remember when Gordon Brown had just been elected, he was spent a weekend
at, he wasn't elected, was
sorry, he took over from Tony Blair. Yeah. He had a sort of nail biting weekend at Chequers where he was having to decide, do I want to call another a general election?
Yes, election,
and he decided not to. Now, what about that decision? Because it actually does put quite a lot of power in the hands of the Prime Minister if they can call a snap election.
Well, I mean,
like
but the coalition have put forward this whole idea of fixed term parliaments. And I mean, I don't agree with fixed term parliaments, actually. I think that, you know, you may need to have an election, just like in Greece.
Well,
they've had one election, they're going to have another one.
If you have a political crisis, it makes sense to go to the electorate, surely.
Well, exactly. That's why having fixed term parliaments is a bit silly, because it's basically tying your hands when you don't necessarily need to tie your hands. So, you know, the decision in the hands of the Prime Minister obviously is a bit iffy, because the Prime Minister obviously will go when they think they're going to win. But, I mean, that's the way we've always done it in this country. And you have fixed term elections in the US, and frankly it's a rigid system.
But what would Britain be like now if Gordon Brown had called an election and actually,
if he'd won,
well, because there was actually quite a lot of support for him at the time.
Yes, exactly, and some people say he should have done it, and then there would have been a Labour victory, and then we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. I think we would have been in the situation we're in now because the banks were still going to collapse anyway, and none of the political class, including Gordon Brown and the new Labour leadership, had any clue that this was going to happen.
Okay, onto
they lack an analysis.
Okay, onto the news of the world, the phone hacking, the Leveson and Rebecca Brooks particularly. And this week we heard from Alison Levitt QC from the office of Keir Starmer, who's the Director of Public Prosecutions.
The Crown Prosecution Service received a file of evidence from the Metropolitan Police Service on the 27th of March 2012 in relation to seven suspects: Rebecca Brooks, Charles Brooks, Cheryl Carter, Mrs. Brooks's then personal assistant, Mark Hanna, head of security at News International, Paul Edwards, Mrs. Brooks's chauffeur who was employed by News International, Daryl Jorsling, and a seventh suspect, both of whom provided security for Mrs. Brooks, supplied by News International. They are all due to answer their bail at police stations later today. When they do so, they will be charged as follows. Charge 1, conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Rebecca Brooks, between the 6th of July and the 19th of July 2011, conspired with Charles Brooks, Cheryl Carter, Mark Hanna, Paul Edwards, Daryl Jorsling, and persons unknown to conceal material from officers of the Metropolitan Police Service. Charge 2, also conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Rebecca Brooks and Cheryl Carter, between the 6th of July and the 9th of July 2011, conspired together permanently to remove seven boxes of material from the archive of News International. Charge 3, a further charge of conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. Rebecca Brooks, Charles Brooks, Mark Hanna, Paul Edwards, and Daryl Jorsling conspired together and with persons unknown between the 15th of July and the 19th of July 2011 to conceal documents, computers, and other electronic equipment from officers of the Metropolitan Police Service. All these matters relate to the ongoing police investigation into allegations of phone hacking and corruption of public officials in relation to the News of the World and the Sun newspapers.
So, that was Alison Levitt QC. Now, she's the Chief Barrister for Keir Starmer, Martin, who's the Director of Public Prosecutions. I think many people can see why this all starts to get rather difficult, because, obviously, Andy Coulson, who's one of the people very close to this whole this new set of the first set of charges in the whole phone hacking business, is a close personal friend of the Prime Minister. So it's all getting rather close to the centre of power, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, I think the political... I mean, obviously, the ins and outs of it are being followed by anoraks like yourself and myself, but the masses out there are not that interested in the detail. They can smell that there's something fishy, there's something wrong with this. And, of course, politically, the problem is that News International look as if they're pulling the strings of the Conservative government. And that, of course, is the issue.
Realistically, I mean, surely, if a mass circulation newspaper like The Sun decides to support one party or another party, isn't it right for the politicians to actually kowtow to these?
They're all pretending that there's no such
media
deals,
barons,
no such deals done. Murdoch says, "Oh, I never discuss anything like that with these people, etc."
I mean, if they pick a fight with Mr. Murdoch,
it's laughable, really.
If they pick a fight with Mr. Murdoch, isn't it likely that they're going to lose the next election?
Well, I mean, when Ed Miliband chose to run with this originally, he was told by his new Labour advisers, "Drop this, Murdoch's far too powerful." He will, and you know, threats were made to Miliband that if he did do this, the Murdoch press was going to go for him. But Miliband, to his credit, said, "No, I'm the chief. I've just been elected. We're going to run with this." And his decision to run with it has been absolutely vindicated. And of course, Tom Watson as well, Tommy Gunn Watson, who was being, you know, basically had his phone tapped and was being followed around by Murdoch's heavies, and he basically stood up to them.
Well, he's also brought out his new book, hasn't he? Dial M for Murdoch.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this,
well,
Paulette?
I just find it very interesting that you know, Murdoch didn't really have to do anything, as he said when he went into the inquiry, that, you know, the politicians all came to him, and of course they did. And yet, you know, nothing's been done about that. We get this sort of, you know, the chauffeur being done, the private secretary, the helper,
but
the cleaner.
They're not being prosecuted for phone hacking. Being prosecuted for allegedly perverting the course of justice.
Well,
that is to say, the allegations are that they have been trying to hide evidence.
Yes, well, in order to protect Murdoch.
Yeah. Well, yes, I find it interesting. I don't know if any of you, I'm sure you must have seen The Spy Who Came In from the Cold with, I think it was Richard Burton. Phone hacking was going on all the time. It seems to be something, you know, that is in there.
It used to be called bugging.
Bugging. And you'd pick up the phone, didn't you? And you, on the television, you'd hear a little click and you'd know that you... Pop stars and film stars, everybody seemed to accept that. It was when it happened, wasn't it, to ordinary people that it really got out of hand. But I hope that this actually does show, because you talk about Ed Miliband, but what about Tony Blair in the Labour Party, who was just as close as David Cameron to these people? Who
he was.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting one, because being in politics, you go to the media, you want the media to publish your story, because you know that that is where you're going to get your message out. But it doesn't mean, I don't think I've ever taken anybody to dinner, or I haven't got any money to pay them. We don't pay them huge amounts of money or do them favours. But, you know, there is a relationship, but that does need to be sorted out.
Anyway,
the relationship.
It's nice to see finally some charges. Also interesting that it's women that have been doing this. It was Sue Ayres, I think, was the policewoman who was at Leveson talking about Operation Wheating. And this is a woman as well. One of the reasons I've been given for that is that Nick Davis had an article explaining that Masonic lodges were being used to recruit people for the Murdoch Empire so that he could get information from public officials. Obviously, if it's a woman, they're not going to be a Freemason. But anyway, our final story this week, community gardens must be turned back into wasteland. Withywood residents created a community garden behind their homes, and they're dismayed the council wants them to return it to wasteland. Tenants in Redford Crescent took it upon themselves to clear the overgrown land, shorten their gardens into a communal garden. Mike Garland with his wife Carol Moxton with other residents of Redford Crescent in Withywood have been full of dump rubbish, concrete blocks, etc. But now the residents say the City Council has told them to put their gardens back the way they were. Paulette.
Well, this seems a very bizarre story, doesn't it? You know, we're meant to have localism and people doing things for themselves and helping each other. And it seems that this, you know, these residents have done this. They've said that they, you know, have taken the car tyres, car engines, syringes from drug addicts. You know, they've cleared it out, 5 tons of metal, and shifted about 10 tons of concrete. So does the council want to put
the message that comes
back?
The message that comes from to me from this is, what is the council actually for if you know, they haven't been looking after this land, the local people have done something for it, and now the council are complaining, you know? So what is the point of having a council? What is the point of paying your council tax? Is all you get for your trouble?
Well, it seems absolutely bizarre.
Martin, the council are saying they've got to put it back the way it was, which which are, you know, may not necessarily include putting the old burnt tyres back where they were.
Well, I think the issue here is that they simply didn't ask for permission before they did it. Now, in fact, I don't see that there's any real issue here. I mean, I see Richard Eddy here is the local councillor who we've had on in the past, and I'm glad to see that he's actually back in you know, he's actually back in action because he was very ill. I mean, this just needs a bit of common sense applied to it, doesn't it? People should just get permission in advance, and if they don't get permission in advance, then people should give it permission and let them get on with it.
Okay, well, it's coming up now to the Murdoch News at 6 o'clock. Thanks to this week's guest, Respect Party candidate for Bristol, Mayor Paulette North. After the news, the Russians say they'll attack Eastern Europe if NATO install the missile defence shield.
Station for Bristol. Listen live online at bcfm.org.uk. BCFM.